With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Hello, my fellow crimeys. Is that even a word? I guess it is now. So for those of you joining for the first time, or if you're 10-second Tom from 51st State, remember him? Hi, I'm Tom. I am the player, Benny Scala, the host of the long-running Dan and Benny in the Ring podcast, as well as a weekly participant on Da 30 and Wrestling Remembered shows, all of which can be seen on the Monty and the Barrow YouTube channel. Damn, just saying that made me tired and want to take a nap because I'm old. And of course, what would true crime be without the bad girl? What would true crime with the bad girl in the play be without my partner? Easy for me to say. In true crime, the one and only Boston bad girl, Lee Siren of Scituate, New England Hall of Fame professional wrestler Brittany Brown. Brittany, in the words of Enzo Amore, bada bing, bada boom, realest guy in the room. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm great.
Good a little bit delusional.
Actually, I think this shirt should be a true crime. What do you think? the dress code police are probably waiting outside my door as we speak. And we are once again joined by our esteemed friend and colleague, the president of Thursday Night, Senor Guns, the Count of Monte Fisto, Phil DeCesare. Phil, how are you, my friend?
Doing great, man, but my orange jumpsuit is in the wash, so we'll have to settle for the neon shirt tonight, you know. I'm hardly a fashion plate myself.
How many digits does it have on it? Well, as we all know, the world of professional wrestling, as always, continues to be rife with shocking news. So, Phil, the Billy Jack Haynes case seems to be evolving on a daily basis. Any updates on the last True Crime episode on Monday?
I've been searching high and low, Benny, and I haven't seen too much regarding his, we know his whereabouts, but in terms of the status or the evolution of where he's being housed, I'm not too aware right now. I've been doing my due diligence, but I've not seen anything. I've searched for some local reports from some of the channels in the Portland area, and I have not seen anything yet. Have you seen anything at all on Mr. Haynes?
You know, it's been real hush-hush for the past
few
days.
It has, mysteriously so.
You know, even the whole McMahon thing, and that's, you know, I was going to say that, you know, that continues to have its twists and turns. And the latest is that a woman named Cara Pipia, hopefully I said that right.
Yeah.
Sister to Cara Mia, that great song by Jane the Americans. a close friend of Ashley Massaro is now alleging that Stephanie McMahon was aware of Massaro's alleged rape in 2006 by a member of the U.S. Army while on a WWE trip to Kuwait. And I apologize for the multiple use of the word alleged, but at this point, I mean, that's really all these things are. Nothing's been proven yet. Now, we've talked about this case extensively, and I'm sure we're going to have a future episode or 10 about it. But really quick, I want to ask both of you guys, starting with Brittany. So if this happened in 2006, where has this Cara lady been for the past 18 years?
Yeah, I saw that, the whole thing. I was a little alarmed with the way she was talking and acting. Didn't make her look too credible or sound too credible.
Right.
And I agree with you. Why now? Why now? Why didn't you come out with it the day after she committed suicide, or a week after, or a month after, even?
That's my point.
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense. I don't understand it. I mean, it's horrible that her friend died. And I do believe that is a lot of the reason why that happened. You know, I've known about this for a long time. And I also heard that the higher ups in the WWE have known about it for a very long time.
So. Yeah. How about you, Phil? What do you think?
I kind of thinketh it stinketh a little bit. I have to say, again, the timing of it is, where was this woman for all these years? Surely her voice would have been heard. We can understand maybe if the wheels of justice behind the scenes were turning slowly as they tend to do. But I'm, you know, given the age we live in, you know, now if a tree falls in the forest, we're all going to hear it because someone's going to be there. So, you know, we should have heard already about this from this woman. We really should have had the backstory already. And again, you know, now we're targeting Stephanie McMahon. And it does seem like there is kind of a concerted effort just to take all of the McMahons out of the company and out of the business. So, again, she would have had much more credibility if she came on the scene way back when. So, you know, again, you know, here the situation is we're talking about a woman herself, a victim who's been dead for a number of years too, who can't even speak on this. So, you know, I'm not ready to jump on this yet and buy into everything she says, but who knows?
Totally agree. So folks, anyone who knows any or all of us, hang on one second, let me. Yeah, do we see Miss Pippia here? Your brain changes as you get older. Not a good look. But anyone who knows any or all of us knows what professional wrestling means to us. I don't. I know Phil, because Phil knows everything. He gets all of my references. Remember the movie Back to School? Professor Turgeson.
Of course I do.
The late, great Sam Kinison.
Of course I do.
Talking about history.
Yeah.
He said history was precious and sacred. You cradle in your arms just like a newborn. And that's how we feel about professional wrestling and its glory, rich and glory past. And that was the basis for choosing not really another wrestler, but somebody with some wrestling connection, which is Dr. Sam Shepard,
yeah.
The good doctor turned very bad wrestler, as the subject for this episode. And Dr. Sam and this case goes way back to the 50s, way before pretty much any of our times. It's still very unique and interesting. And the bad girl is going to take us through the Cliff Notes version of this story.
Yes. So this is a very interesting one. And, you know, talk about twists and turns. But yeah, Sam Shepard, by all accounts, he had the perfect life. That's the way it looked. He was a neurosurgeon at Bayview Hospital, was married to a beautiful woman named Marilyn, and had a young son named Chip. They had a beautiful lakefront home in Cleveland and frequently entertained neighbors. Such was the case on July 3rd, 1954. During the course of the evening, Dr. Sam fell asleep on the daybed in the living room. Marilyn walked the neighbors out and went to bed in their upstairs bedroom. In the early morning hours of July 4th, 1954, Marilyn Shepard was bludgeoned to death in her bed with an unknown instrument. The bedroom was covered with blood splatter. Drops of blood were found throughout the house. Some items from the house, including Dr. Sam's wristwatch, keychain, and key, and fraternity ring, appeared to have been stolen. They were later found in a canvas bag in the shrubbery behind the house. According to Shepard, he was sleeping soundly on the daybed downstairs when he heard the cries from his wife. He ran upstairs where he saw a white form in the bedroom and was, it's a weird way to explain it, and was subsequently knocked unconscious.
Yeah, is it a biped, I think? Yeah,
he said, yeah.
I don't.
Like a Yeti or a Sasquatch, an upright biped? I don't know.
Like a white form.
Chupacabra? Okay. I mean, come on.
And when he awoke, he saw the person, this white form.
The Michelin man.
Yeah, downstairs.
Didn't you say guy, you know?
Chased the intruder out of the house down to the beach where they tussled, and Shepard was knocked again unconscious. At 5:40 a.m., a neighbor who was actually the town's mayor received an urgent phone call from Shepard, who pleaded for him to come to his house. When the neighbor and his wife arrived, Dr. Sam was found shirtless and his pants were wet with a blood stain on the knee. Authorities arrived shortly after. Shepherd seemed very disoriented and in shock. The family dog was not heard barking to indicate that there was an intruder. And their 7-year-old son, Sam Reese Chip Shepherd, was asleep in the adjacent bedroom throughout the incident. So that's interesting. So, Phil, there's no barking. The young son was still asleep in the next room, and there are no signs of an intruder or a struggle. And he calls the mayor instead of the police. What is Detective Phil's first instinct?
You know, one could easily jump to the conclusion that the mayor was an ally, maybe a political ally, someone who would help him clean up a scene. But, you know, when I hear things like about the dog not barking and the child not waking up, my first thought is maybe it is someone from outside the family who's familiar with the family and familiar with the dog. And actually, on that thought, they had a workman under their employ who had come regularly to do everything from painting to odd jobs and that sort of thing. And the records, I think, indicate now that he had a bit of a fixation with Mrs. Shepherd. So I'm seeing that it's plausible that he, again, knowing their schedule, probably even knowing their weekend plans for it, it's my understanding that he had done a lot of work, again, at the home. So he was kind of an unobtrusive kind of visitor. He could probably just come and go. Might have been the man responsible. And not to jump ahead, but this man in later years was convicted and actually died in prison for another murder. So not related to this, but of a woman.
Correct.
And, yes. You know, to me, that seems... My first instinct, my first thought, suspect number one would be this guy. And I have his name somewhere, and you guys might too. But when I read that, I thought, makes total sense, you know? Because I think he was also absolutely in prison for some sexual crimes as well. So this guy was not a Boy Scout. You know, and so I'm kind of leaning towards that. And, you know, with respect to Dr. Shepherd and claiming to be knocked out twice, I think it is plausible. In fact, Dr. Shepherd's own doctor, or the doctor, I don't know if it was actually his, who examined him, he was found to have a broken, cracked vertebrae in his back, okay? This notion that he was hit with significant blunt force from behind, this is not something that he could do himself. I mean, I know he knows anatomy well, and if anyone could feign an injury like this, maybe he could. But apparently it was at such an angle and such a situation that he was obviously struck from behind from somebody. And when it comes to, you know, of course, he was describing this intruder as like this amorphous white form biped or whatever. I also heard him describe the intruder as someone with a bushy hair too. Again, he might not have been seeing right at that time too. So he was in a stupor to begin with, whether he was actually fully conscious when he was fighting for his life and trying to save his wife, you know. And of course he was again knocked out down at the beach. So to me, I really don't see, again, this is just my outsider looking in view, that he had anything to do with this. But I don't know I want to hear what you guys have to say.
Yeah, we'll definitely get to that. You know, I have two quick takes, though. You know, one is, well, Jerry Wills is in the chat room.
Oh, good.
He's a great trivia person.
Yes.
And, you know, the reason why I'm going to bring this up is because, Phil, you mentioned he was knocked out twice.
Yeah.
And my first thought was to Jimmy Olsen in Superman.
Cub reporter.
And
yeah.
How many times do you think, and I don't know how many episodes there are of Superman, what's his real name, I think, Jack Larson?
Yes, the original and greatest.
How many times was Jack Larson pistol whipped in Superman? The under-over, I'm going to say it's about 73. It seems like every episode he got knocked out at least once. But you know, the only thing that really kind of, you know, because we all have kids and everything, is that when he came to, that he, you know, apparently heard a noise downstairs. and he chased the intruder supposedly out of the house. And then he's, you know, he's tussling with the guy on the lake. You know, as a parent, my very first instinct would have been, you know, to go into that kid's room, yeah, make sure he's safe before I did anything. So that's my one, you know, to me, that's a huge red flag. But now keep in mind that we're talking about the 1950s here,
absolutely,
many years before the internet, cell phone, mm-hmm, social media, even television was in its relative infancy. That's when the days of wrestling and the Dumont Network. And the main source of communication was, hard as it is to believe, in 2024, the newspaper. And yeah, now, I don't know why, but for whatever reason, the Cleveland Press was not a huge fan of Dr. Sam Shepard. In fact, they put pressure on the coroner to do an inquest, and shortly afterwards, Shepard was arrested. They immediately focused on him. The police didn't believe his story, and you know, they didn't really want to consider any other suspects. But the press ran many stories which are quite actually inflammatory towards Shepard. A federal judge later made the remark, if there was ever a trial by newspaper, this is a perfect example. And this really gets me. There was a popular radio show alleging that Shepard was having an affair with a New York City woman with who he had fathered a child. And two members of the jury, not only did they hear this, but the jury was not sequestered. They did admit to the judge that they heard the broadcast. And the judge didn't even remove him from the jury. And, you know, if Frank Barone was here, he'd be screaming, holy crap, right? It sure sounds like the deck was stacked against the dock. The deck against the dock. The trial ended on December 21st, after 4 days of deliberation. Now, bad girl, you were going to tell me that despite the overwhelming odds, Dr. Sam had a nice early Merry Christmas, right?
Au contraire, my friend. The jury found Shepard guilty of second degree murder, so it wasn't a very Merry Christmas. He was sentenced to life in prison. On January 7th, 1955, about 2.5 weeks after the trial ended, Shepard's mother, Ethel, was found dead from a self-inflicted gunshot. 11 days after that, his father, Richard, died of a bleeding gastric ulcer. So I would say not a very happy Christmas season for Mr. Doctor.
No. Not at all. So you're telling me in a span of 199 days, which is a little bit more than 6.5 months. So he loses his wife to murder, his mom to suicide, his dad to illness. Oh, and by the way, now he's a convicted murderer. I mean, that sounds like a country record. The only thing you're missing is a dog with a broken leg, right? A hound. Otherwise, you got the whole thing.
And the pickup truck.
So he does serve 10 years. And his attorney, William Corrigan, spent 6 years issuing appeals on Shepard's case, all of which were summarily rejected. And as a result of this, William Corrigan left his law practice and formed a rock band called Smashing Pumpkins. Actually, he passed away in 1961.
Yeah.
I knew Phil would get that one. And his case was taken over by a young attorney named F. Lee Bailey. And if that name sounds familiar, it's because he was part of the dream team that defended O.J. Simpson. And Bailey had a writ of habeas corpus, I said that right, granted on July 15th, 1964. So our special investigator, Phil, a.k.a. Senior Guns, a.k.a. the Thursday Night President, a.k.a. the Count of Monte Cristo, I'm tired, was not present at the trial, due in large part to not having been born yet. But he has done his homework, and he'll fill us in about the appeal as well as the retrial.
Yes, absolutely. The great F. Lee Bailey did come to the defense again after his sentencing, his conviction for second degree murder. F. Lee Bailey came. He charged that Judge Blythen was actually with improper conduct in federal court, which means he did very little to shield Dr. Shepard from the media circus that ensued. We remember 1994, 1995, OJ and the circus that was, okay? The circus that launched 24-hour news coverage, okay? The white Bronco, the slow chase, and everything subsequent. But again, against the backdrop, and not the back body drop, but the backdrop of 1954 when this all went down. Tony Soprano said in The Sopranos, one episode, they were all at the the dinner table, and Meadow, his daughter, brought up the subject of sex. And Tony said, I don't care what year it is out there. In here, it's 1954, okay? Because in 1954, you know, we think of happy days. We think of innocence. So the kind of case, as salacious as this was traumatic to traumatic to the nation, you know? It really was. And again, when a person is traumatized, especially a jury, they really can't think straight. And as a result, and according to Attorney Bailey's viewpoint, it kind of corrupted the court. And he appealed, ultimately took it to the Supreme Court. Okay. And what ultimately happened in 1966, the High Court supported the original ruling that's citing the judge's failure to protect Shepard from all this circus. Okay. And the state of Ohio actually had an option to retry Shepard, which they did. But this time he was found not guilty. Okay. The evidence was virtually non-existent. Okay. And again, a lot of the circumstantial stuff with the, you know, particularly with the affair with his lab assistant, again, really, again, against the context of the times, really painted him as, you know, okay, if he's guilty of adultery and affair, he must be guilty of murder. And I think that was kind of the mindset back then. And again, we're talking about Cleveland, Ohio. Okay. You know, hardly New York City or Hollywood or anywhere else. So, I mean, you know, we talk about such a conservative, almost backwater kind of place. So, I mean, all those factors went in. But again, ultimately, he was released. And so he had a few good years after. So in the fall of 1966, he was retried, but this time again, not guilty. And he was let out. And then, of course, enter the world of professional wrestling eventually. And I know you guys will jump on a little bit from there.
Absolutely. Thanks for that great report. And now, Bad Girl, before we got into Whitey Bulger, I mentioned that I knew very little about him, but I was drawn in hook, line, and sinker. How much did you know about this guy? And I mean, he's from the, you know, the distant past, 70 years ago. What did you know about, how much did you know about Dr. Sam Shepard? And what are your thoughts on this case?
Well, you know, the more I have found out, which is quite a bit more, I didn't know a whole lot. I knew he was a doctor. I knew what kind of doctor he was. I knew what he was accused of, convicted of, and then it was overturned. I knew he became a wrestler, and then I knew he died young. That was all I knew. This case to me is unbelievable. A lot more meat in it than anyone ever would have expected, if you ask me.
Yeah, and I want to jump in too. You know, it's interesting. Didn't know much about him other than, of course, the mandible claw, which was, we'll get into. But, you know, when Mick Foley came along in 1996 and brought that in and then started making, Jim Ross started making references to Dr. Sam Shepard, the fact that mankind was wearing this mask made me think that there was some kind of Hannibal Lecter quality or characteristic to Dr. Shepard, which kind of spooked me just thinking about that. So I didn't get a clear picture. Then we had that Harrison Ford picture in 1993, The Fugitive, that they said was based on things. And I thought maybe that the murderer was maybe, what was it, a one-armed murderer or something very rare, a suspect that would have been difficult to find. I think in that movie, the murderer might have had one arm or something like that. I forget. There was some kind of physical anomaly, which made it seem very implausible that he was the murderer, much less probable that they would actually be able to find him and apprehend him. So I had no idea, based on the movies and based on Mick Foley's character portrayal, that he was this doctor of pretty upstanding reputation, you know, who was a remarkable athlete too, which I'm sure you're going to get into a little bit too. So actually had, you know, some athletic background to make the jump into pro wrestling, which is the weirdest sort of transition you could think of anyway. But so I learned a lot about him. And the more I learned about him, the more I read about him, the more I realized that he didn't really seem like the type of guy who would commit this most grievous offense. Right. Not only, again, did he murder his wife, but his wife was, at the time, pregnant with their, potentially with their second child. So
that's right. Yes,
yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. So he didn't strike me, based on anything, as a man who would be remotely capable of doing, you know, this sort of thing. And again, ultimately, the evidence, I think, bore that out. But yeah, fascinating individual.
Yeah.
I guess I had a little bit of an edge here because my mom, I don't know if she got it from the library or she just bought it. I think I was like 16 or 17. I read the book, The Defense Never Rests, which was F. Lee Bailey. And the two cases that struck me the most, which ironically now we will have done both of them on true crime, was DeSalvo and Sam Shepard.
Yeah.
And this book, I think, came out in 71 or 72, which is like 22, 23 years before OJ. But I mean, he was already, yeah, you know, a celebrated attorney. But so now that Dr. Sam's been exonerated, one would think that he goes right back to his surgical practice. And in fact, on May 10th, 1968, he is indeed reinstated at the Youngstown Osteopathic Hospital. I mean, what's better in wrestling than a babyface comeback? As of May 10th, 1968, this is as good as it gets. You know, going from a convicted murderer all the way back to a practicing surgeon, and, well, for a few days anyway. So the bad girl's now going to lead us through his second chance at medicine, as well as his, what Bill alluded to, his very abbreviated post-medicine career in wrestling, something very near and dear to us all.
Yeah, quite a surprise, the change in career, so to speak. But yeah, after his release from prison, he opened a medical office in the Columbus suburb of Gahanna. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Gahanna, Ohio. On May 10th, 1968, Shepard was granted his surgical privileges, as you earlier stated, at the Youngstown Osteopathic Hospital, but his skills as a surgeon had quite deteriorated, and much of the time he was impaired, sadly, by alcohol. How scary is that? A neurosurgeon drinking. 5 days after he was granted privileges, he performed a dissectomy on a woman and accidentally cut an artery. The patient died the next day. On August 6th, he nicked the right iliac artery on a 29-year-old patient who bled to death internally. So needless to say, he resigned from the hospital staff a few months later after a couple of wrongful death suits had been filed by the patient's families. And he was now engaged at this time, and his soon-to-be father-in-law was professional wrestler George Strickland, who, until I read up on this case, I had never heard of before. I don't know if you guys have.
No.
I've never heard of George.
Yeah, the only Strickland I know was the hole monitor in Back to the Future.
Well, this gentleman introduced him to pro wrestling and trained him for it. He debuted in August of 1969 at the old age, especially if you're a woman in Japan, of 45 years old as Killer Sam Shepard.
Wow.
Wrestling Jeez. Wild Bill Scholl. Shepard wrestled, believe it or not, over 40 matches before his death, which was just in April of 1970, including a number of tag team bouts with Strickland as his partner. His notoriety made him a strong draw, which I could certainly understand. Imagine nowadays a overturned convicted murderer becoming a professional wrestler. I think that would draw.
Why didn't OJ do it? Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Totally.
During his wrestling career, as you mentioned earlier, Phil, Dr. Shepard used his anatomical knowledge to develop a new submission hold that he called the mandible nerve pinch.
Yeah.
The maneuver went on to be renamed the mandible claw and utilized and popularized by professional wrestler Mick Foley / Mankind in 1996. So 6 months before he passed away, he did, in fact, marry Colleen Strickland, George's daughter. Toward the end of his life, he was reportedly drinking as much as 2/5 of liquors a day, which is 1.5 liters.
Whew. Wow.
on April 6, 1970. He was found dead. I know. He was found dead in his home in Columbus, Ohio. And the early reports indicated that he died of liver failure, which I'm not surprised. But the official cause of death was Wernicke encephalopathy, a type of brain damage associated with advanced alcoholism. That's wow. Heard of. He was buried in Forest Lawn Memorial Gardens in Columbus, Ohio.
You know, what's notable about Dr. Shepherd was that he had a very good amateur background in high school and college. He wrestled undergrad, and he actually wrestled in prison too, which you talk about bringing some, not only collegiate athleticism, but some street cred into the business. So, and again, he always kept himself in really good shape. Physical culture was really part of his world. I imagine more so in prison as it is now for many in that setting. But, you know, for the time, he was about 6 feet tall, maybe a smidge over, and probably, I think, about 195, probably billed about 220, but in pretty decent shape, all things considered. And he, you know, he still had a look of youth to him, too. So, and, you know, it's interesting. He did try to set up a general practice in town for a while, just, you know, seeing patients as a GP. He seemed to have attracted a lot of women, particularly were very, again, you know, interested in him, you know, because he did carry this notoriety with him. In fact, he saw patients.
Sure.
Many of them couldn't actually even pay him, or, you know, would pay him with food and other such things. And he never really sought money from the patients too. So, despite those horrible situations he had with surgery, obviously he wasn't well enough to perform anymore. He did try his hand at more of a general practice too, but again, and I think he had 30 patients at one point I read too, but it just wasn't something that held his interest or could really even sustain him at that point, you know, financially. But and that's, I think, in part why he turned to wrestling too, because again, the promises from Strickland of these big paydays. And, you know, he did perform in front of some good crowds, you know, for his limited run in the business for the several months. So again, semi mains and main events. So, you know, he made an impact in the business, and he did bring a really pretty innovative and very realistic sort of finisher, you know. And again, I marvel at the fact that it had taken some 6 years or 25 years for someone to capitalize on it and basically make it their own. So, you know, kudos to Mick Foley for doing that anyway.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, we're getting a notification here from our producer, Bruce, that it's about time we cut this for a minute and hear from our commercial sponsors. So we will be right back, folks.
The Monty and the Pharaoh Show is brought to you by...
Because wine is your second favorite four-letter word. California wine, New York attitude. Good fucking wine.
Yeah.
Tired of that same old breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Same old tasting scrambled eggs, burger, that dinner steak, ribs, or pork chops? Why not add a little bit of spice or just a touch of heat to make the difference? Change that scrambled egg with a little bit of Johnny Fabulous's John Cena Sr.'s Million Dollar Jalapeno Hot Sauce. Great on burgers, steaks, chops, and those barbecued ribs.
And Nitro's Garage for all your automotive needs. Call 646-675-2349. That's 646-675-2349. For all your automotive needs, Nitro's Garage, ask for Jack.
Hi. Do you treat your dog as part of the family? Well, so do we. So why not celebrate your pup's birthday with the ultimate party box? Check us out on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Party Pup Info, and let us make your pup's party or any celebration perfection.
M&J Video Games and Collectibles. Sport and non-sport cards, wrestling items, autographed items. We buy, sell, and trade. M&J Video Games and Collectibles, located at 1049 Queen Street, Southington, Connecticut. Call us at 1-860-479-9223 or 860-93-GAMES. M&J Video Games and Collectibles.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Now, I said that last Monday, and 3 days later on Thursday, Vince Russo used that exact intro for his weekly podcast on YouTube. So, Vinny Roo, for all you do, this one's for you. So, now back
here's
to
another one.
Here.
Here's so, another one, Vinny. We tease him a lot because we got him on the spot. Welcome back.
There you go. I like that.
Welcome back, Carter.
Welcome back.
Yeah.
You know, when you were talking about the mandibular, I was thinking, you know, maybe it's a good thing his finisher wasn't the flying colonoscopy. That would have hurt.
Well, Andre used to check the oil, as you may recall, reading or hearing sometimes in a ring with someone
right.
He didn't
yeah,
like.
There you go.
You know? Some people have a green thumb. Andre had, well, we won't say that. It wasn't a green thumb.
You know? There you go.
I can't even imagine.
So now, Dr. Sam's body remained buried until September 1997 when he was exhumed for DNA testing as part of the lawsuit brought by his son, Chip, relation to Firebreaker Chip, to clear his father's name. I knew Phil would get that too. Phil gets all my references.
Next thing you know, you'll be pinned to a guy named Chip.
Right.
Rodney Dangerfield.
Now, the DNA testing actually did absolve Shepard of the murder. So then one must ask if the doc didn't do it, who did? So the bad girl's going to take us home, and I guarantee she won't be slipping on a meatball, Captain Lou Albano style.
No, definitely not. Well, Playa, during the civil trial, which was ultimately dismissed as it fell outside the statute of limitations, plaintiff attorney Terry Gilbert contended that Rehard Eberling, an occasional handyman,
yes.
This is exactly what Phil was talking about earlier, and window washer at the Shepherd home was likeliest the suspect in Marilyn's murder. Eberling found Marilyn attractive, and he was very familiar with the layout of the Shepherd home, just like you were saying earlier, Phil. I mean, this sounds so much like, it's him. So several years after the murder, he actually confessed to several burglaries in the area. He showed detectives two rings that belonged to Marilyn Shepherd, and he claimed that he stole the rings from Sam Shepherd's brother's house in 1958, 4 years after the murder. He also confessed to having cut his finger while washing windows at the Shepherd home shortly just before the murder. That was his explanation of why his blood was on the premises. A polygraph test was given at the time, and it was determined that he was being truthful. Now, that's not what I was expecting. I thought for sure that wasn't going to work out for him. However, a reexamination of the results years later shifted the determination to either inconclusive or deceptive.
Yeah.
Isn't it funny how it's either or? So he was later convicted of murdering Ethel May Durkin, a wealthy elderly widow. Both of Durkin's sisters, Myrtle Frey and Sarah Bell Farrow, died under mysterious circumstances. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Frey was killed after being savagely beaten about the head and face and then strangled. Farrow died following a fall down the basement steps of the home she shared with Durkin in 1970, a fall which in which she broke both legs and both arms. Eberling died in an Ohio prison in 1998, where he was serving a life sentence for the 1984 murder of Ethel May Durkin.
A fitting answer.
Wow. Wow. The great Bart Simpson. Ay, caramba. So let's go around the horn for any final thoughts. So I'm going to go first here. First of all, I have to ask you guys, how many people do you think in the United States, either male or female, right now, under the age of 20, are named either Ethel or Myrtle? Is it in single digits?
Yeah. Definitely.
That's one of those names that I think is, you know, it's like, I'm trying to think for a guy. I don't know. Kenneth, maybe? some names that just have George. Become extinct. Ethel and Myrtle, I think, are two of them. But
absolutely.
I don't know. It's bizarre as Dr. Sam's story was. He just seemed like an odd guy to begin with. He was just really. I mean, some people are just out there, and you know the way he described everything was kind of odd. But I think that was his style. And you have a handyman who, number one, had the hots for the wife. Dr. Sam, really, what motive did he have? He had a beautiful wife. He had, not only did he have a young 7-year-old son, he had another, I believe it was a son on the way, booming practice, lakefront home, a bunch of friends, for good friends with the mayor. I mean, why is he going to risk all that? I mean, just to, you know, for what? And you have somebody who actually, you know, the man who worked for him, not only did he get convicted for a murder, but there were two others that were very mysterious, even though he wasn't charged with them. So I got to say it's Eberlin. What do you say, Brittany?
Yeah, I agree. There's just too much. I mean, his blood was there. Yeah, he was a handyman there, but I mean, there's just too much. There's too much. And the thing is we know that he's capable, right? We know he's capable of murder because that's where he ended up, in jail for murder. So, I mean, I definitely think, I think so. What do you think, Phil?
I totally agree. It seems, to me, it seems it's like Occam's razor. The simplest explanation is likely the right one. So not to bring a razor into the conversation, but I do believe, and again, this guy, his penchant for brutality as evidenced by these murders for which he was convicted makes it, and again, the setting, the scene of this murder, I mean, there are just so many parallels, you know. But more interesting, and one of my bigger questions, because I really feel that I believe that it was he who did the murder, is why the editor of the paper was pushing so hard to jail and convict, why this all this pressure was put upon the court, and in a modest amount of time, they found him guilty. You know, again, this guy was friends with the mayor. I mean, was this something between the editor and the mayor? You know, what other factors, outside factors, were involved? Did he actually have an adulterous relationship? And if he did, you know, who were the players in the, tangentially involved in this? And right. How do they fit in? I mean, you know, it seems like just a tragic setup in so many ways. You know, I mean, the world was deprived of a great surgeon, and in the process, a woman and her child lost their life. And, you know, it's interesting how, you know, one barbaric act can lead to just so much misery. And then obviously in this case, to further barbaric acts. So, and again, where ultimately was the justice? And, you know, this is 1954. So it kind of begs the question, can this still happen? Does this still happen? Obviously it does. But how frequently do these sorts of things, as Gorilla Monsoon would say, this miscarriage of justice, you know, how many more times, you know, how often is this occurring now? You know, it does nothing to bolster my belief in our justice system, you know, although while my belief isn't entirely shaken, events and cases like this do really make me wonder and worry sometimes, you know.
Yeah,
that's kind of my deal on that.
I totally agree. And it's just so odd that a prominent surgeon you know, why he would be the last, and zero previous criminal record, as far as I know.
Right.
And, you know, by all accounts, they were happy. They were entertaining people that night. So I don't know, you know, and as far as the adulterous thing, I guess there were rumors that both of them were fooling around with other people. I think Sam with a lab technician, I think at the hospital maybe. And I thought I read that Marilyn might have been messing around with the mayor himself. So, you know, and that was another thing that I forgot to, you know, as far as the red flags, besides the fact that he didn't check on his son immediately. That was the one thing that really, you know, made me wonder is, and there was apparently about a 2-hour delay from when the coroner said she passed away till the time he even called the mayor. Like, why did you do that, number one? Wow. And number two, you know, why are you calling the mayor, not the police? But, you know, everybody reacts differently. I mean, if you do believe his story that he was, you know, knocked out twice, he had either anywhere from a moderate to a very severe concussion.
Right.
And you're not going to be in the right frame of mind to do anything at that point. Yeah. So I don't get it either. I mean, they, you know, like that judge said, he, you know, he never saw such a trial by newspaper before. That Cleveland Press was out to get Dr. Sam for whatever reason.
Yeah. All horrible.
Makes you wonder if they were related to the handyman somehow.
Yeah.
And again, a testament to the power of the printed word, too, back then. Yeah. And his injuries, I'm telling you.
What's that, Phil?
Just his injuries alone. How is he going to strike himself in the back of the head, crack his vertebrae like that at such an angle that could be, you know, with a potentially disastrous result, you know? He obviously was hit with some great force from behind, and it's a wonder he survived that, actually, too.
Yeah.
He was really close to paralysis or even worse.
And who knows? Maybe the guy left him. I mean, because you'd wonder why. You know, the guy would obviously was like it was overkill for Marilyn. Why didn't they do the same for him? But maybe they thought that he broke his neck and he was dead.
Yeah.
The other thing I don't quite understand is I don't know the location of the day bed that he fell asleep in and where that was in relation, because apparently he fell asleep while we're watching a movie, Dr. Sam, while we're entertaining the guests. And after she let the guests out, she went upstairs. But where was that daybed? So, in other words, if somebody's breaking into the house and they see him, you know, what you would think that they'd go for him immediately. But I don't know if it was in a room like to the side where, you know, the guy just went right up the stairs. That part I don't know. Do you guys know?
I don't know the layout of the house and how he seemingly was the first target. But again, it strikes me as a situation that it was someone familiar who knew his way around, who probably knew what, you know, kind of what the day was going to be for them and how they, you know, spent their weekends and had parties and that sort of thing, and was able to unobtrusively slip in and, you know, the kind of the old Pearl Harbor job from behind, you know, and subsequently, I have to think that his first strike on Marilyn must have, you know, maybe killed her immediately, you know, and hence there was no screaming, the child wasn't awakened and that sort of thing too, you know, so it was, to me, it seems very calculated, very maybe that would even
Well, and, you know, a dog, if you're like a repairman and you're at the house on a regular basis, at some point, you know, the dog is going to get used to you. And maybe, if, you know, it's used to you in the house, it's not going to be something where the dog is going to bark when you come in the house because you've done it so many times. Because I thought about that, too.
Maybe it was like Whitey Bulger.
Bark, but that could be, you know, that could explain that.
Yeah, maybe it was like Whitey Bulger and he packed dog biscuits and, you know, bribed the dog with dog biscuits every time, like Whitey used to do.
He went to PetSmart on the way, and got some deer jerky.
There you go. Yes, deer jerky.
Well, I mean, this was quite the episode, and I do speak for all of us in giving a huge shout-out to all our friends who are watching live in the chat room, but I know that many of you will be watching later on, and we thank you for that as well. And true crime with the Bad Girl in the Play is growing by leaps and bounds. And that is all due to everyone out there supporting us. So for the Bad Girl, Brittany Brown, and the president, Phil DeCesare, this is The Playa, wishing you a safe and prosperous week. See you next crime.
Cue that unsolved mystery music. Love it.
Yeah.
It's spooky, man. That's good.